Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to No Borders, No Races, Top World Albums of 2019. I am your King Baby Doc Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. And just like last year, I'm being joined by my good buddy and host of the Wicked Emery Podcast Show, AFLM.
Hi, I like music too.
Yes, he does. How's your year been? How's your decade been?
Well, my decade has been great, and my year has... which year are we talking about? Are we talking about my 2020 so far? Are we talking about my overall 2019?
Overall 2019.
I liked it. I got to work independently on my comic book, which I'm still doing now, and it's all great.
Yes, and you are currently up to what page of Solarian Sun as of this recording?
Well, as of this recording, I am currently working on page 73 for my Patreon subscribers, and page 53 is live for free on the website. And so you can read up to page 53 on the website, and that's a lot of content, because that's chapters 0, 1, and 2.
Awesome.
Go read it.
Yes. So, music in 2019. What a year. Like, this was a... I know I said this last year. I said it every year. It's a tough year to judge. Like,
well, so other years have been not as tough because maybe 10 albums came out that I listened to. So I was like, oh, okay, then I just have to put them in order. That's fine.
Right.
But this year was more than 10 albums, and it was all of my favorites. So...
Right.
We're in for
welcome,
a show.
Welcome to my boat. This is what I deal with every single year.
Yep.
I always listen to, like, what? Like, 50 or 60 albums a year.
That's
what. And that's just the non-J-pop stuff, mind you.
That's
yeah.
True.
Yeah. And there's a lot of great bands, a lot of great artists that release albums. Some of which, you know, some of my favorite bands. They didn't even make my list this year. So, before we dive into the list itself, why don't we talk about... Let's get the bad stuff out of the way. What was your, like, disappointments?
Oh, my goodness. I had so many disappointments this year. And actually, some of my disappointments are going to factor into the list later as far as, like, favorites. So, disappointments of this year. One of my favorite bands since 2007, 2008, Grendel.
Yeah.
Grendel, my dude, JP... The music that you released on your new... And this is Ascending the Abyss, his Ascending the Abyss album. Mm-hmm. The music that you've composed for this album is beautiful. So gorgeous. Oh my gosh, I could listen to the music forever. Just scrub the lyrics. I'm sorry, but the lyrics were so cringeworthy. And like, I felt a little bit of edgelord out of them. Like, trying to be edgy, trying to be poetic, trying to be dark. Because... His old stuff was very cyberpunk. It was very cyberpunk. It was very techie and robot-y and stuff. And now he's moving more towards occult and dark and gothic. And so now it's just kind of turning into an emo crying poetic mess. And the lyrics are just not as good. But the music, dude, is awesome. But the album overall is almost unlistenable because of how bad and embarrassing the lyrics are.
I'm kind of picturing him right now as Dim from Invader Zim trying to have an excuse to be mad and angry about something. Would you say that's more of, like, what he was going through on this album?
Maybe. I think it's actually just the simple factor of changing in interests. His interests are evolving, which is cool, which is fine. Because Age of the Disposable Body was a great album. And it was like a midway transition between this dark stuff and the cyberpunk stuff. Because it was like dark gothic cyberpunk instead of just full cyberpunk.
Yeah.
And that album was amazing. So I don't know what he did with the lyric writing on this one, but it just did not work. For me.
Okay.
I have two more. I don't know if you want to swap.
No. You can talk about the other two because I only have one album.
You only have one. Okay. The second one is the new Dawn of Ashes album. So I've been listening to Dawn of Ashes as about as long as I've been listening to Grendel back when they were an aggro tech band and now they're a metal band. They're an extreme metal band. And the lead guy, Christoph Bathory, keeps writing music. And every time he releases an album, the fans are always saying, oh my gosh, this is the next Crypt Injection. This is the next Genocide Chapters. And Genocide Chapters was the first album that they released when they became an extreme black metal band.
Right.
And that's not a good thing for your fans to say that, because you want every album to be unique and not compared to your best metal album.
Right.
So
you want it to be, this was better than correct. That album.
So I first started listening to Dawn of Ashes in 2008, and that was the same year that they released the Crypt Injection. Well, the album that came out this year was The Crypt Injection Part 2. And not a terrible album, but a boring album, to say the least.
Do you feel like this was him trying to appease the fans of the first Crypt Injection?
Possibly. He definitely wanted to go back to his electronic roots and do it, which is fine. It's totally cool, but it didn't capture me the way Crypt Injection did. And I think it's just, again, he has changing interests. He doesn't want to be doing the same thing. And I think he's still trying to find his footing after Genocide Chapters was so successful and he left behind the aggro tech stuff. You know, and now fans are like, okay, he's like, oh, well, now maybe I'll do a fusion. I'll do like industrial black metal and I'll have a lot of electronic music inside my metal and whatever. And his stage persona is changing.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing like high-heeled boots and fishnet stockings with short shorts, as opposed to his burn victim trench coat, dark black metal covered in blood persona.
I mean, it's cool if it's like each album is a different persona sort of thing, because Marilyn Manson does that all the time with his character.
Like androgyny.
Yes.
The whole androgyny black metal thing, but or
David Bowie.
Yeah, but it's just bizarre, you know. And I'm like it's fine because I'm used to it as far as the metal, but it wasn't what I remember of Christoph Bathory and his old albums.
Gotcha.
So not the worst album I've ever heard, but it did not make the list because I was just like, eh, I can't do it.
Okay.
But it did make the disappointments and not the honorable mentions, unfortunately.
All right, gotcha.
Biggest disappointment of the year for me: North Tail's new album. Now this is shocking, because North Tail is the band that Christian Eriksson went to and made on with two other guys after he left Twilight Force.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the breaking point of the entire music universe for power metal for me, because I didn't know if Twilight Force was made up of Christian Eriksson's amazing vocals, Or if it's the amazing compositions that Twilight Force is able to put together. Well, North Tail made my disappointments list. It's not a good album. The lyric writing is bad. Again, same thing with Grendel. Cringeworthy lyrics. They don't tell a story. They're just lazy. The music sounds good, but lyrically bad. And Christian Eriksson was a way better Twilight Force singer because they wrote that music for him.
Exactly.
So that was my biggest disappointment, because I was like, oh my gosh, I get to listen to Christian Eriksson again? Yes! So exciting! Bad.
Womp.
Yeah. And I was just like, I tried. I listened to the whole album a couple times, and I was just like, I can't do it.
Right.
I can't do this. It's not even going to make the list this year.
I mean, we've talked about this privately, but it brought to mind like what happened with one of my favorite bands, yep. Turbo Negro.
Right.
When Hank Von Helvet left the group, a lot of people thought, well, was it his vocals that made Turbo Negro, or was it the music that made Turbo Negro?
Mm-hmm.
And then when Hank Von Helvet made his solo album, and it sucked!
Yeah.
That's when you realize that he wasn't the band. And then they brought in the Duke of Nothing to do the vocals for the new Turbo Negro stuff. The first album, Sexual Harassment, was okay, but you could tell that was more tailored for Hank Von Helvet before he left the band. But then when they made Rock and Roll Machine, which was on my list of top albums of 2018, you realized Turbo Negro is a great, very talented band.
Correct.
Hank Von Helvett is just a good singer, not a talented writer.
Well, there was a whole lot of controversy surrounding Christian Eriksson's departure. Because a lot of people were like, oh, because Christian Eriksson was just like, it was a surprise to me. They kicked me out. Like, I wasn't a part of this. They fired me. And
you see, I thought when you were telling me about this, I thought you left the band.
Yeah, well, and because Twilight Force released a statement saying, oh, we're so sorry about the departure of Christian Eriksson. Like, he'll be a friend forever. And Christian was like, I'm friends with some of them, but not all of them. So it was not an easy departure, and a lot of people are like, oh, Christian Eriksson must be a prima donna, he must be dramatic, he must be, like, he must be kind of whiny, and then a lot of people are like, no, I think Twilight Force was being malicious. So nobody knows. Nobody actually knows what happened. We just have statements from both sides of the band.
Mm-hmm.
After listening to this album, I have to kind of think that Christian Eriksson might be a bit of a prima donna.
Okay.
Especially because on one of their live streams, they were like, I'd rather, and now I can sing about other things other than just dragons, which was a stab at Twilight Force. However, Twilight Force released an album this year, so I guess we're going to find out where it showed up on my list. So.
Right. So for my end, so I listed a lot of really good albums, many of which will be on my honorable mentions list. The only record for me that really disappointed me was a guy that, you know, I love to death, and that is Frank Turner.
Mm,
so yes. Frank Turner made an album, a concept album, about women in history called No Man's Land.
Mm.
Lyrically, it's a great album because you get to learn about the history of these women, their accomplishments and everything, and he does it in a very clever way.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, on the other hand, and this is a guy who can just do an amazing show just with an acoustic guitar,
right,
and
yes.
It sounds amazing. Wasn't that good?
No.
Like, it was less than plain. It felt like he was telling these stories and he was trying to fill like something in the background, and he just sprung up like whatever sort of music.
Interesting.
Now, one of the aspects or reasons behind may be the fact that he didn't do this album with his normal band, the Sleeping Souls. He did it with some other musicians for it. So it didn't have that same feel, that same excitement that you would get from a previous Frank Turner record.
Yeah.
But I've only listened to this album once, and I have no intention of actually going back to listening to it at all.
That's a bummer.
It is. And like I said, I admire Frank Turner. I think he's one of the best songwriters on the planet.
Yep.
But this year, as lyrically good as No Man's Land was, it doesn't really hold a candle to a lot of the stuff he did in the past.
Yeah. Well, I bet in the same way, where if Northtail releases a new album, I'm still going to check it out to see maybe if it's better than the last album.
Yeah.
And then so maybe that would be the same thing with Frank Turner if he does another concept album.
Yes.
You know, so who knows?
Right. Okay, we got the shit out of the way.
Yep.
Let's talk about the good stuff. Let's talk about our list. We have some shared picks. We've got our own album of the year picks.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start off on your end with an album that was actually on my previous list, the top Japanese albums of 2019.
Yeah, so Baby Metal, right?
Yes.
So I don't listen to a lot of Japanese music. I actually don't enjoy Japanese music all that much, believe it or not.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, it feels very produced to me. A lot of it sounds the same, and I just can't really get behind the Japanese lyrics. As much as I love the Japanese language, I don't like it in song form.
Which is weird, because that's kind of why I got into it, because their language is basically a rhythm.
Exactly. It's a musical language. But Baby Metal made my number 10 slot, and I love Baby Metal. And so Baby Metal released an album this year. It was very good. Not number one good, obviously, but good enough to make my list where I'd be like, oh my gosh, I'd listen to this again,
yeah.
Right? And so you played on your list, so actually your listeners get to hear Baby Metal twice,
yes.
Which is great, so they get a sample of two songs from their albums. You played the song What's it called again?
Omajinai,
with Joachim Broden of Sabaton, which is undisputably the best song on the album. Which is weird because people are like, no, that song sucks. And it's like, what, are you dumb? No, it's the best song on the album.
It's actually Sue Metal's favorite song now.
Yeah, good. As it should be, because everything with Joachim Broden is just magical.
Oh, yeah, without question.
Yeah, however, I didn't choose that song because Evan played it on his show. I chose a different song that is totally awesome. And they say it the way they say da da dance, da 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 dance. So I guess da da dance is the name of the song. It's just, when you say that in English, it's so strange. So yeah, da da dance, and it's just so well composed. The whole album is well composed. Where the first half of the album, I'm sure you said a lot of this on your show. First half of the album is super bright and cheery and very sparkly and it really gives you the whole metal galaxy feel.
Yes,
like it has this galaxy type feel to it that is so, it makes a lot of sense. And then the second half of this album is a lot darker. Well, Da Da Dance is from the first half of the album,
right,
which I loved.
And I should make the point, too, that this features Tak Matsumoto of the popular band Bees on guitar in this song.
Mm. Yes.
And normally I'm not a fan of Bees, but he's very good in this particular song.
Yeah. Well, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with Baby Metal in the future, because Baby Metal is such a changing project, especially now that they're changing up the lineup of Baby Metal.
Right.
Now,
for me, and I made this for my show, I felt like Moe Metal has become more of the Mike Shinoda to Sue Metal's Chester Bennington, if we're comparing it to Linkin Park. Because if you listen to like all the rapping elements, that's all Moe Metal.
So that's a good dynamic. You lose one of your members, you can't do as much para para.
Yeah.
And so you give them a different dynamic, and it works really well. Really well. So this is Da Da Dance from Baby Metal's new album, Metal Cats.
Bye.
Da Da Dance on Baby Metal's new album, Metal Galaxy, featuring Sabaton. All right, so...
Nope, that wasn't featuring Sabaton.
I know. I'm just saying, because I like Sabaton so much, I'm being a brat. Evan, what was your top 10? Or your number 10 spot?
So my number 10, I have to give it to the guy who took my top list in 2017, Beck, for his new album, Hyperspace.
Ooh, I love Beck.
So... Hyperspace is more of a lo-fi pop affair compared to what he did with Colors, which was more of like, I'm gonna make some the most awesome pop music ever, and that was Colors. This one was more lo-fi.
Yeah.
But listening to Beck on this album, I felt like he had a very big weight that was lifted off of his shoulders. And if you were reading about what happened with him over the year, you can kind of guess what that big weight was. One of the things that really surprised me about Hyperspace is that Beck normally does his best stuff by himself, but for this album, he got Pharrell Williams to help produce and co-write some of the music. And it's actually pretty strong with what he was able to do. Like, he brought a sort of swagger in a song like Saw Lightning, a melancholy spacey vibe in Stratosphere, and he even experimented with a little autotune in the song See-Through. Like, there's a part of me that jokes that Beck is kind of making fun of Kanye West ever since that time when Beck won the Grammy for Album of the Year and Kanye tried to go up on the stage. And, like, ever since then, he's like, oh, Kanye, so you want me to do a song like this? And always winds up being, like, 10 times better than anything Kanye's ever done.
Beck is always amazing. I am so surprised that he's still releasing music that I'm just like, that is great. Like, I love... Like, I listened to a lot of this album that you sent, and I love it. It's Beck. It's so good. It's so good.
I think one of the things that I love about Beck is that you can even, like, listen to some of his older stuff. Even going back to Mellow Glow, Mellow Gold, it still sounds like something that would have been written today.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the whole Beastie Boys aspect. It's music that was futuristic, still sounds futuristic, but could have been made today. Despite the fact that it being made like almost 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah, totally.
So, Hyperspace, number 10 on my list by Beck, a great laid-back record from one of the world's most exciting performers, and the song you're going to hear from that is Chemical.
You say love is a chemical, and a gun to the soul. Wow, 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 wow.
was Chemical by Beck from his album Hyperspace, my number 10 pick for albums of the year. And now for the number 9 pick, we actually have a shared album!
Yay, shared album!
Yes, so tell our listeners a little bit about Battle Beast!
So, I've been a fan of Battle Beast for a few years now. I first started listening to them when I was bored at work, and I would listen to... I was just like, what's the craziest thing I could listen to? And I was like, oh, what's this Battle Beast thing? It has a cool lion on the front of it, and it looks like you're gonna tear your head off. And I started listening to it, and I heard this woman. Her name was Noura. And ooh. she started screaming into my ears. I'm just like, what is this music? And then I just kept listening to Battle Beast, and then Battle Beast turned into a new album. I think... they released a 2017 album, I believe. Yeah, and then... just at the dead front, like January of 2019, a surprise album showed up, and it was just like Battle Beast, new Battle Beast album. I was like, oh my gosh.
No more Hollywood endings.
No more Hollywood endings. And I was just like, Evan, check this out. Battle Beast released an album.
And I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. I kind of want to get like an 80s montage thing happening while I listen to this.
Yeah, so Battle Beast is a really super fun band. I've seen them live. Once.
Really?
Yes. It was under the most unfortunate circumstances because it was at a festival and their guitar wouldn't work, so they were cut short on time. They played like 3 songs and then they left.
But was it that metal festival you went to in Worcester?
It was, because they were touring with Sabaton, and that was the first time I saw Sabaton. I was listening to this album and it came out right at the front of the year, and it still was able to make the list. It was so well composed. Noura's voice is just beautiful, as always. And I think it's funny, the more Battle Beast albums that get released, the more feminine she sounds. Where in the earlier Battle Beast albums, she really shrieks it out, and you're just like, is this like a man singing this? But it sounds like a woman, because she almost sounds like...
The way that I described it was like Meatloaf as a woman.
Yeah, like truly, almost, yeah.
Like when Meatloaf was good, because Meatloaf sucks right now.
But... she's so unique with that voice, and she's just become a power metal icon because of it. And No More Hollywood Endings just really sticks out. What do you think?
So the way I describe this album is if Valhalla was depicted by the director of Kung Fury.
Interesting.
It feels 80s, but it feels like something that was told at like the dawn of time.
Yeah. Yeah, Battle Beast has that very time periodic feel to it.
Right.
It feels like it's from the 80s.
But it's not like a kind of metal that you would mosh to. Like, I say this in my notes here. It makes you want to dance and pirouette and shit. Like, you want to do, like, the most hardcore ballet to Battle Beast.
I mean, when you have a guitar, it's just... that's just how
it... It does. It does. So, I was blown away by this album when... because we had been going back and forth about this album list, like, ever since the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And when you had listed Battle Beast, that was, like, the first... one from your list that I listened to, and I was like, holy shit.
Because it was the first one on my list. Actually, I mean, Rhapsody of Fire was on there for a little bit, but Battle Beast was the first one to make it onto the list where I was like, okay, this is gonna stick, probably.
Yeah. I would say, like, my favorite song on there is Unfairy Tales.
Okay.
It has this very, like... It brings to mind what you said about her sounding more feminine. It's a very sexy song.
Mm.
But it's still powerful.
Well, the song that stuck out to me that's probably my favorite on the album is actually the one that we're going to be playing.
Mine too.
So
this one is the one that's like, when I heard this, is like, this is the song I want to play when it gets time to do our top albums list.
Yeah.
Because it's powerful, it's epic.
Epic.
It's, ugh. I feel like you could tell a movie just by this song.
Probably.
The song is called Eden.
Eden.
I see the darkness in your eyes. Yeah.
That was Eden by Battle Beast from No More Hollywood Endings. Andrew and mine's shared pick for number 9.
Yay!
Now, let's go back to branching off to different records.
That's right.
Your number 8 record.
So, my number 8 record is... You're gonna be so surprised, it's another metal band! There's a lot of metal this year.
You did, dude. Like, practically almost everything on your list is metal.
So, number 8... is a lovely Swiss folk band known as Elviti. And their new album this year was called, hang on, let me see if I can pronounce this correctly, Ateganatos. Ateganatos. I believe that's how you say it. The only reason I don't know if that's how you say it is.
I think it's Ateganatos. I think you don't say the G.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
Ateganatos.
Ateganatos. Either way, I started listening to... This was actually the last album I... It released sometime mid this year, but this is the last album I actually listened to this year, which actually knocked a couple other bands off my list because I added this song, or this album. Mm. So I've been listening to Elviti for a while now. Again, while I was bored at work, I discovered them. They had this song from way back called Enis Mona. It's a beautifully, beautifully, beautifully rendered folk song. They're Swedish heritage, and I love everything that comes from the sound of their old, tiny instruments mixed with the metal that they go... They use a lot of traditional instruments in their music and their compositions. But then you have the unclean, guttural screaming, the female vocals on top of that, and the metal guitars. And the mix is so well done, almost as well done as you would find in like a Korpiklaani,
yeah.
But heavier. Much, much, much heavier.
I would describe it as, like, vocal-wise, like an angel and a demon battling it out, like in a singing competition.
Yeah. And this album was really interesting because as soon as I turned it on, I was hooked. It was like, okay, I get it. I got this album. I'm gonna keep going. They have a few... Basically, every 4 songs or so on this album is just a musical ballad. There's no lyrics. It's just a short musical break for, like, a minute or two. And then they go back to lyrical songs. And those songs are good, but every song that includes lyrics has this wonderful riff. It's super heavy. He starts singing in this wonderfully well-composed pentameter. It's so good. I was so blown away by it. The one thing that's really unfortunate about this band is all of the names that they name stuff are so hard to say because they're Swiss.
Right. You can't blame them for that.
You can't. One of the songs that was really close to being my choice for this was A Cry in the Wilderness. Mm-hmm. And that was really easy to say. But as I was listening to the album, just trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do? Which songs am I actually going to pick for this? There was one song that is actually probably not a great representation of the band because it has a lot more female vocals in this, but the male unclean vocals are really prevalent in the chorus. And if you like the way this song sounds and you like the way the unclean lyrics sound, then you'll like the rest of the album. But the song is so well composed because it just has this beautiful intro with the classical instruments, the traditional Swiss instruments from history. At this point, I'm just talking about you gotta just listen to it. So here is a song by Elviti off the album Ateganatos, known as Amberamus.
Time.
was Ambaramus by Elveti off their newest album, Atiknatos. Oh, Swiss! It's so hard!
That's like the sixth different pronunciation of that album you've gone through.
Well, it's all the same, though. It's all the same. Everybody's going to be like, I know what album he's talking about.
Yeah.
All right, Evan, what was your number 8 pick?
So, this has to go to a band called Sleater-Kinney. Now, some of you may know Sleater-Kinney from their frontwoman, Carrie Brownstone, or Carrie Brownstein, actually, because she's the comedic partner of Fred Armisen from Portlandia.
Mm.
But Sleater-Kinney was her first gig, and she's known more primarily as... Well, she should be known more primarily as a musician, not an actress and turning musician, blah, 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 blah. Anyway,
yeah.
So I had heard about the making of this album, and I was very excited because it was going to be produced by a very critically acclaimed guitarist, St. Vincent, who actually is a mutual friend of our buddies from Bright Primate.
Correct.
James and Lydia. Yeah. But when I overheard that the drummer, Janet Weiss, after the album was recorded, she left the band because she didn't like the new direction, I was a little worried.
Mm.
But then the album finally came out, and it is kind of a new direction for Sleater-Kinney, but it's a damn good one.
Dude, the song sample that you sent me, I was just like, this is awesome. I was just so into it. Oh my gosh.
So, when the album opens up, it's the title track. The best way for me to describe it is, like, imagine you're, like, Little Red Riding Hood, and, like, a werewolf keeps attacking her over and over and over again. It's freaky, it's scary, but it's badass. But what I like about the album, too, besides the scarier aspect, there's, like, this sort of espionage kind of feel to the record as well. Like the drummer Janet Weiss, Carrie Brownstein, and the other member, Corin Tucker, they sound kind of sneaky, like they're planning an epic scheme of sorts. And like songs like Hurry On Home and Reach Out, they sound like that they're just itching to like steal something, whether it be a physical object or maybe it's your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they want to steal your heart. The one song that really got my attention though was a song called Restless, and the reason why that this song got my attention was because it was the first time I ever heard a song that sounded like the American equivalent of a Pillows track.
Oh.
Which I found interesting because the Pillows actually got a lot of their influence by listening to bands like The Breeders and Sleater-Kinney, all these sort of girl riot, queer rock kind of musicians. Neil Sawayama-Naka used that to implement it into the sound of the Pillows. So now I find it interesting that a band would come around and kind of emulate their sound, despite the fact that they were actually the originators of that sound, that blah, blah, blah. Anyway, going back and forth between that. So, despite some of the darker elements of the Centerworld Hold, it does evolve into a more uplifting record, a very beautiful record, as it reaches the end of its runtime. Like, the final track, which is, like, this beautiful piano ballad that Carrie sings, is just gorgeous. It, like, it takes all the hauntingness away that you experience throughout the album, and, like, it gently wakes you up from the nightmare. If that's a good way to describe it.
Cool.
So, number 8 on my list, Sleater-Kinney, The Center World Hold. And this song that I'm about to play from it is probably my favorite song off the track. It's a song that would make any zombie shake their ass. This is Bad Dance.
Crave a little more. Let me defend you. I am defiled.
Bad Dance by Slater Kinney from their album The Center Won't Hold, number 8 on my top albums list. Andrew, let's go back to some power metal.
Yeah, let's go back to metal. All right. So this is another folk metal band, but this is from a different region of Europe. So I've been listening to this band, Tear, for a while now. They base a lot of their music off of mythology and gods, and it's very, very, very European in nature. And, I mean, Tyr is the name of a god in general. He's the god of either war or justice. I forget which one it is. One of them's D&D, one of them's actual thing. But anyway, so the god, so Tyr is a really, really gritty folk band. And the lead singer's voice is so unique. I've really never heard anything like it. Now, the new album, Hell, is based off of that. Like, it has a lot to do with the mythological Hell. And I mean, even just starting from the very beginning of, you look at the album cover and you see, you'll see the Cerberus wolf at the gates of Hell, guarding it. And the album starts out with the song Gates of Hell.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, the riff that brings you into it is just so amazing. I've never heard a metal riff introduce me to an album like Tear does in Gates of Hell. It's so cool. And then I was watching a little bit of a video that he made about making the album before he released it, and he was just like, I'm gonna be experimenting with unclean lyrics. So he starts off, the very first time you hear his voice on it, he's screaming. And he doesn't scream. That's not what Tear is about. So it was like a brand new thing. But it's the only time he does it on the album is right at the beginning of Gates of Hell. And then it just goes into normal Tear music. And then they compose these wonderfully crafted compositions with just rhythm and beautifully constructed high notes, low notes, and shifting those pitches to create this dynamic lyricism. Ooh, it's so, 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 so good.
Would you define them as Viking metal?
I would. So they are folk metal, but so folk metal and Viking metal go very hand in hand.
Very much so.
Viking metal is a type of folk metal. A lot of people give Viking metal a hard time because it's just Viking metal, and they're just like, oh, look how creative it is. It's more Viking metal. But Tear doesn't do that. They really have different topics for every single album that they've released. And so, as far as the album Hell goes, I think this is a great idea to talk about Hell and that thing. However, I don't think the song that I chose off this album, I could choose a whole, but there's Fire and Flames is a beautiful song. Gates of Hell is a beautiful song. Just all these different, that switch the pitch all the time. But the song that I'm going to play you off of Tear's new album, Hell, is King of Time. That was Tear off of their new album, Hell, the King of Time. Evan, what was your number seven?
So, we're actually going to do a little bit of local flavor here for my number seven pick with a band that calls themselves Bad Larry's. So, Bad Larry's took me by surprise because they opened up for my friends in the band Sushi Mamire, mm-hmm. a Japanese punk band. Played at a small club or bar just right down the street from where I live. And met them, I chatted with them, very nice people. Bought their album there. And their debut album, Perfect Trim, mm-hmm. is 30 minutes of Breeders-like indie rock with Nico Case-inspired vocals with a roller derby girl spirit. Kind of like that. It's beautiful, but you feel like you're going to get punched somewhere down the line as you listen to it.
Fair enough.
But what I like about the album is that whole mixture. Like, it's rough rock and roll, but beautiful vocals. Harmonies and the opener Falling and Debarked. It'll swoon any listener's heart. But what I think made this list on number seven is definitely the wild side of Bad Larry's. And songs like Roller Skate, Not That Crazy, and Take Care. They are wonderful. They're a band that, if you live in the Boston area, you're more than likely to be able to catch them live, because they are definitely a band from the Boston area that I would say that you should be watching out for, because this new album of theirs, their debut album, Perfect Trim, is a great introduction for them. And I feel like they have potential to break out of, you know, the Boston music scene. So Perfect Trim, number seven on my list, by Bad Larry's. It's light, it's heavy, and it kicks its ass through and through. And the song I'm going to play from that is Sweaty. Number seven on my list. Andrew, let's get a little bit animated with your number six pick.
Hey, Evan.
Yeah.
Do you like the Gorillaz?
Yes, I do.
Well, Gorillaz didn't release an album, so it doesn't matter, but do you want something to replace the Gorillaz for you?
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, I'm going to tell you yes, because Beelzebubs is with their debut album out right now. Oh my gosh, I was blown away by this. So this is such a unique thing for me. Because one, I love animation. Two, I love bands that don't actually exist.
Yep.
And three, I love metal music. If you didn't know that already.
Right.
So the band Beelzebubs, it was an interesting concept. So the Beelzebubs were created by an artist known as J.P. Ahoen, I believe his name is. He's also Eastern European, so
of course
they have weird names. And J.P. created them in Inktober. Are you familiar with the Inktober?
Oh, yes. Inktober? Inktober is like every day you draw something.
So, yeah, based off of a theme on the list.
Yes.
So Beelzebubs was his Inktober. He started writing these little comics about these black metal guys who have like a family life and they're on hiatus from their band because they're like the lead singer is raising his family. and exploded into what is now an actual band. And they have two animated, fully animated music videos. Can you imagine just writing a silly comic about a black metal band for Inktober, and it got so popular that...
You see, I find it funny that you brought up Gorillaz, because when I was watching and listening to it, it wasn't Gorillaz I thought of, it was Death Clock and Metalocalypse.
Right, exactly.
But unlike Death Clock, I feel like there's no humor in the lyrics of Beelzebubs. It's heavy shit in this.
It's real black metal.
Definite black metal.
And it's melodic black metal. But it's real. And it's so good. Here's my recommendation. Even if you do not like black metal, at least watch the music videos. Because the music videos are beautifully animated. They are super well crafted. They're funny. They don't take themselves seriously at all. Every single music video has some sort of comedy bit in it. And especially the song that I'm going to play for you.
Yeah.
But man, I saw, as soon as I watched the first music video, and then I found out, oh yeah, the album is going to be released in the next month or so, I was like, I'm in. Mm-hmm. Let's get it. Let's do this. So the debut album of Beelzebubs is Pantheon of the Nightside Gods. And the album, or the song that I'm going to play off the album for you guys, is Blackened Call. It's accompanied with the music video as well. But here it is. Beelzebubs, Pantheon of the Nightside Gods, Blackened Call. Beelzebubs on their new album, Pantheon of the Nightside Gods, and that was Blackened Call. Evan, what's your number 6 pick?
Andrew, are you ready to brood?
Sure.
All right. Because once again, one of the greatest brood singers on the planet has returned with a new album, and that is Mark Lanegan. Mm. Mark Lanegan Band. The album is called Somebody's Knocking. Now, he started off the year by unleashing the music video for the song Stitch It Up, which is one of his most hard rocking tracks in years. I sent it to you because, now if you've never seen the music video, it has this very, I don't know if you remember MTV in the 90s much, it has Jimmy the Cab Driver, who used to be in all the promos for MTV back in the early 90s.
Yes.
And the music video for it is, it's surprisingly funny. But, like, seeing Mark Lanegan, like, Mark Lanegan's always been a badass because of his vocals. He just looks badass in whatever. He even looks like a SoundCloud rapper in one bit. And he's just, he just still looks like just this unbelievable, like, god of a man.
Yeah, that song was awesome.
Yeah.
It was really good.
And what I like about Somebody's Knocking is, like, the first half of the album feels like the soundtrack of, like, a vengeful vampire. Like, there's this hypnotic and erotic feel to Dark Disco Jag. A Letter Never Sent is, like, very espionage-like. It feels like you're driving down, like, Route 666 or whatever, your evil road. And then you got a song like Gazing from the Shore, which really surprised me because it's very much aligned with what he used to do with his first band, Screaming Trees. And he swore to never, like, do that sort of style of song ever again because it wasn't too heavy for with that sort of sound. So to hear him actually do a sound like a song like this and have it sound like a band that he kind of swore off many years ago, it took me by surprise. But then the second half of the album is very laid back, kind of like the after party of the Vampire's Massacre. Like these gothic love songs of Name and Number and She Loved You, which even they're like they're gothic, but they're very dance floor worthy. Like they sound kind of similar to a band that we're going to be talking about, rather you're going to be talking about much later on in our list. And then you have a song like Paper Hat, which is reminded me lyrically of Tom Waits because of the way he plays the metaphors and even with the way his wordplay is. So, if you need a good dark album, you can always count on Mark Lanegan Band. And Somebody's Knocking is just the right amount of dark that we need to deal with some of the, let's call it, fucked up stuff of 2019. And the song that I'm going to play off of the album is the opening track. This is Disbelief Suspension.
Going downtown in the wrong direction. I'm a five-alarm fire, not a fire engine. You wanna ride, you wanna take a ride. You wanna ride, you wanna take a ride. Down is up, my disbelief suspension. It's gonna run a blade through the third dimension. You wanna ride, you wanna take a ride. You wanna ride, you wanna take a ride. To take a piece, you gotta get inside of it. You come up lame and you only get a part of it. Who's to blame? Roll around inside the dirt. Taste the shame and cut yourself until it hurts. Till it hurts. Drip, drip, dripping acid out of the dropper. I'm gonna fly through the sun in a helicopter. You wanna ride, you wanna take a ride. You wanna ride, you wanna take a ride. To take a piece, you gotta get inside of it. You come up lame, you only get a part of it. Who's to blame? Roll around inside the dirt. Taste the shame and cut yourself until it hurts. Till it hurts. Suspension.
And that was Disbelief Suspension by Mark Lanegan Band from Somebody's Knocking, number 6 on my list of top albums of 2019. Andrew, I know you've been waiting to talk about this band.
Always. I'm always ready to talk about this band because this is not only a band I like to talk about, this is my favorite band. Sometimes I like to consider them my number one favorite band of all time. They didn't make the top of my list because this album wasn't their best, but it still made my list, and it maybe because of a little bit of bias, and because they're my favorite band, or maybe because of they're actually, you know, okay, well, this is good. I'll listen to this a lot. And that is the band Freedom Call. Now, I've been listening to Freedom Call for a while. They appropriately showed up in my life when I was having I was going through a lot of really rough stuff, and ever since I discovered them at that point, I resonated with them, and they've stuck with me forever.
They're very feel-good in their power metal.
They make some of the happiest music I've ever listened to. Chris Bay, the lead singer of Freedom Call, is very much a all of, like, you know, as they even on their last album they had a song called Metal Is for Everybody, or Metal Is for Everyone. And that's the mentality that they go with all of their albums. Now they still have a bit of a fantasy metal side to them. They have, you know, their Knights of Tarragon, and they basically have a mythos around Freedom Call, which is great. I love it. Now, is this album as good as the other albums? Maybe not. With Beyond being my favorite album from theirs, and then after that you have Eternity. Is it as good as even their last album, which was a step below those, Master of Light? No, maybe not. But the album itself, this is the only physical album I bought this year. I purchased it, I pre-ordered it as soon as I found out, oh my gosh, Freedom Call's releasing a new album. I listened to their singles. Their singles were good. They were good. And gave me that Freedom Call feel. Will they ever return to their old sound of Beyond or even Crystal Empire? You know, those great days. I don't know. But this album, the new album that they released this year is called M-E-T-A-L,
or Metal.
Metal.
I will say, I feel like it's a good album to start out with if you want to get into Freedom Call, though.
Do you think so?
I would think, because this is like the first, because honestly, this is the first album of Freedom Call that I listened to front and back, and yep. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm like, I understand why Andrew likes this band.
Yeah.
It's very feel-good, very positive, and you yep. can't help but love a power metal group that does a song about a unicorn.
Yeah, I mean, and the positivity, I actually have, when I bought the album, they sent me an ace with a unicorn on it.
Like, oh, okay.
A playing card. It says, it's a Freedom Call playing card, and it's the ace, and it has a picture of a unicorn on it. It's the ace of the unicorn. And yeah, so they, you know, they released this first single this year, 111. Which was super cool. It had a very classic, it had a very Master of Light feel to it. Then they released Spirit of Daedalus, which is probably one of my favorite songs off the album. And the chorus of that was just so beautifully crafted. It was just great. I love listening to it. Chris Bay just has this way of making everything so cheerful and good. And that's what the spirit of Freedom Call is about, and the spirit of the Knights of Tarragon. And the song that I want to play is actually a song that came later in me listening to the album. Like, it took me a few times to listen to the album to actually make it my favorite.
Right.
But before I talk about that, I forgot to mention that when I bought the physical album, I bought the limited edition, which had extra tracks on it.
Oh, okay.
And the extra tracks actually aren't on Spotify. You can't get them.
Oh, really?
And it came with acoustic versions of Emerald Skies, which is one of my favorite songs off their last album, and Warriors, which is one of their most famous songs ever off the album Eternity. And Emerald Skies kind of has like a country sound to it, and Warriors kind of has a contemporary Christian sound to it, which is kind of weird. And so getting those two songs alone on the special edition was almost worth the whole album of it.
I always like when they do like acoustic versions of the songs, because it's kind of like it's introducing you to both like the heart and the skeletal version of the song before you put in all the guts and muscles yep. of the actual main song.
That's right. So, what song am I going to be playing to you off of Freedom Call's Metal? Well, again, this is the song that I really started to enjoy later, But now I just love listening to it because it really gives me that feel of the spirit of Freedom Call and the happiness of the Knights of Tarragon. And that is Days of Glory. With their new album this year, Metal, and that was Days of Glory. Evan, what was your number five pick?
So, for my number five pick, I have to give it to a guy by the name of Ben Cook. Now, Ben Cook is someone that I've talked about in the past, but not personally, because he is one of the guitarists in the band Fucked Up.
Yep.
But he's also got his own stuff. He's also got his own hardcore punk band called No Warning. He's got his own synth pop group called Yacht Club, and he's got this, which is kind of his Britpop persona, Young Gov. And what I like about Ben Cook is he's a chameleon in the music world. Mm. Like, whatever genre of music he does, he fits into it perfectly.
He's a pretty busy guy.
Very busy guy. And the album that he released this year was called Gov 1 and 2. So, this record actually started out as two EPs that were released back-to-back this year and then being combined shortly into just one record. Ergo, it counts as one full-length album. But had he only released Gov 1, this album would have been on my list anyway, because Gov 1 reminded me a lot of, like, the solo works of George Harrison. Mm-hmm. Very Indian-based, very beautiful, just this amazing guitar rock that has this sort of, like, post-Beatles feel to it. Roll With Me, which reminded me a lot of, like, when George Harrison was doing the Traveling Wilburys with Tom Petty and Bob Dylan and Roy Orbison, that whole crew. And then Love Always went back to the Hare Krishna flower power elements of the late 60s that George Harrison's music would evolve into. But then, like, I believe the last song on the album, A Boring Story, it reminded me a lot of The Flaming Lips, but as interpreted as the Fab Four. So that was Gov 1, but then Gov 2 came around, had still some of that George Harrison feel to it, but it added some Prince-like pop to the mix with songs like Trying to Decide, which was this very beautiful dance number that, like, dares to be drowned in neon lights. And then you have a song like Song About Feeling Insane, which reminded me a lot of the stuff that Elvis Costello would do in the 80s. And the final track on this album, which is called Can't Say Goodbye, when I was listening to it, it reminded me a lot of the group Yes, aka the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and theme people. I know they're no more than that, but to us anime fans, it's the JoJo band. So Ben Cook, under his Young Gov persona, delivered two EPs, combined them into one amazing album, which was Gov 1 and 2. And it definitely demonstrates why he's a truly underrated songwriter and showcases just how damn good he is. And the song I'm going to be playing on here is very much the song that reminded me of, like, true 80s pop. And that song is Caught Looking. From his album Gov 1 and 2, my number 5 album pick of 2019. Andrew, I think this may be a precursor to another album that we're going to be talking about later on.
It's true. And also, speaking of busy guys in the music industry, this is a band featuring Tommy Johansson. Now, those of you who aren't metalheads like me and don't know the metal scene as well as I do and all the figures within it who keep jumping from band to band to band to band to band, Tommy Johansson is in a lot of bands.
Yes.
Tommy Johansson has done everything from his own band, starting in Ryan Exceed, all the way up to what he is in now, which is Sabaton. He's a guitar player in Sabaton. Well, he's done things like cover albums, Swedish pop albums, and filler. He's filled in for Twilight Force.
Yep.
He was the singer while they were looking for a replacement for Christian Eriksson. He's done so many things, and after his growing popularity with Sabaton, he's finally back in his own Ryan Exceed persona and reformatted that band into what is now known as Majestica.
Yes.
Majestica is a beautifully, beautifully constructed band of Tommy's own, I don't know what you would call it, his desires or his own ideas that just are just flowing out. When they first announced that they were making an album, I was like, ooh, okay. Like, Ryan Exceed is okay. I wonder what Majestica is going to sound like. And then they released their first single, which was Rising Tides. And Rising Tides instantly just blew me away. I listened to it over and over and over and over again. I was so excited for the actual album to release that, because Rising Tide came out at the beginning of the year, and the full album of Majestica, Above the Sky, didn't come out until like June, like the summer.
Yeah.
So it was a long wait, and I listened to that single a lot, which was about an adventure. It was a quest to go find the Fountain of Youth, and these sailors that would go find the Fountain of Youth, and they haven't found it yet, but they're going to. And it's so fun because, one, it's a beautifully crafted, composed, constructed song. Two, lyrically, it's fun.
Yeah.
And then you just have Tommy's lyrics, which he's an amazing vocalist. He has such range.
I was surprised, actually.
The range of his voice is like how high he can hit notes. That's why when he replaced Christian Eriksson in Twilight Force, we're just like, just keep Tommy. You don't have to find a new singer. Just make Tommy your new singer. You know, because he was awesome. He could sing Twilight Force songs amazingly. And you listen to this album, and there's some serious songs. Like, there's some really good fantasy metal, power metal ballads, like Above the Sky, and like Alliance Forever. But then you have funny songs. You know?
I know. Actually have the lyrics up to Father Time, Where Are You Now? With lyrics like, why have you become such a needy, stubborn jerk? Yeah. Who thinks it's more important to get drunk and get a tan? Like, he's hilarious with a lot of these lyrics.
Yeah, and Rat Pack, which is like paying homage to older crew bands. And then you have Night Call Girl, which is this ballad about...
Oh, how I wish I could afford you, but I can't.
Yeah, which is just supposed to be funny and fun. And then you even have the cover that ends the whole album of Spaceballs. And I truly, honestly do not think I've ever heard a more perfect cover in my entire life.
I agree.
He translated the Spaceball theme song so beautifully, and the way he sings it is just perfect and magical. I love it. I love everything about it.
So I would put it on a pedestal next to Elton John's version of Pinball Wizard.
Oh my gosh.
And of course, Marilyn Manson's Sweet Dreams Are Made of This.
Or This Is Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Oh my god, This Is Halloween. That too.
Which is another perfect cover of a song.
Yes.
So, Majestica... I don't. Would you call this a debut album? Because Tommy has done so many things, and this.
So from what I read, that this is still the old band, yeah, but just with a new name.
Right, exactly. So it's not really a debut album. It's just a new Ryan Exceed album,
right,
known as Majestica.
It's the evolved form.
Yeah,
he gave him an evolution stuff for Pokemon.
That's right. Yeah, and they became Majestica, which is great. Yeah. So off the new album, I'm actually going to play the title track, because the title track and is how you kick off the album, and it plays so beautifully, and it's just a perfect example of what you're going to experience from beginning to end. So, this is Majestica's Above the Sky, Above the Sky.
Standing alone in darkness, away from light you cannot see. No good times remember, no eagles flying free. Then you hear a voice in the distance,
So that was my number four pick, Majestica Above the Sky. Evan, what is your number four pick?
So for my number four pick, and I'm actually wearing the shirt of the band right now as I'm recording it.
Yep.
See, the thing I've noticed with a pattern with this band, Tegendronicus, where the odd-numbered albums are like blueprints for the even-numbered ones. The Arrogant Grievances helped to make The Monitor. Local Business led to The Most Lamentable Tragedy. And then last year's album, which I'm disappointed that I didn't make as an honorable mention, A Productive Cough, led here to their sixth album, An Obelisk, where the former head frontman Patrick Stickles airing out his frustrations via ballads, and then he ironed out that anger with like more punk-friendly bangers into this record. So for this album, he got, as a producer, Bob Mould. Now, Bob Mould is a legendary frontman of a band called Husker Du, and he also, back in the early 90s, was a writer for World Championship Wrestling. A little fun fact right there. I will say, and this might turn Andrew off just a little bit, the album is a little bit more political than his past works, which often dealt with his struggles in life. But he then realized that what he's been struggling with is basically the same thing that a lot of us have been struggling with. And to make a point, punk's always been political.
Oh, always.
The very first single that he released was a song called I Blame Society. And when this song hit, I felt like this is the best song of 2019. It is a punk anthem that deserves to be screamed by every man, woman, and child. Basically about like just how everyone gets a shit hand dealt and the wicked, 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 wicked higher-ups just keep squishing us down more and more and more and more. And a great example, another great example of that sort of theme is the first song on this album, which was Just Like Ringing a Bell. It talks about how they try to make things better that are right in front of us, like better TVs, better computers, better video games, that sort of stuff. While the rest of the world is making things worse from within, kind of like isolating all of us and just making some really bad rules and bad laws and whatnot. And then a song like My Body and Me, a great bluesy rock jam that deals with gut instincts, like I have a bad feeling about this, what's going on, I should be having fun, why do I feel this way? But then it leads to a song like Within the Gravitation, which is about how people are trying to fight for an uncertain future, and again, the higher-ups just being afraid of those people because they're going to ruin their plans or ruin their money, or however you want to interpret it. So despite it being more political than personal, which I always prefer the personal aspect of Patrick Stickles, this album, An Obelisk, proves yet again like why they're one of the most underrated bands in America right now. It rocks really hard while making a solid point, but it's a point that you can listen to over and over again. Because the thing I've noticed with a lot of political albums is like, you listen to it once and you're like, okay, I see what they're going with. I don't have to listen to it again. Mm-hmm. Titus Andronicus makes you stick around every single time you listen to it because it isn't just political. It feels very life-based. It feels very relatable. And they're honestly one of the best live acts on the planet right now. I saw them over at Once Ballroom just down the street from me. And even in a small club like that, with almost, I want to say, 300 people packed into there, the feeling of just togetherness and love and punk rock in general, they bring it hard. And this album, An Obelisk, truly demonstrates why they are such a fantastic group. So, number four on my list, Titus Andronicus, An Obelisk. And from that album is The Lion Inside.
Some kind of other thing. Next to some known, it takes control.
The Line Inside by Titus Andronicus from An Obelisk, my number 4 pick for top albums of 2019. Andrew, let's talk about your number 3 pick.
Yes, so my number 3 pick is Black Audio. So Black Audio is an interesting band that has an interesting history. Now, a lot of people may be familiar with Davey Havok.
AFI.
If you like AFI. So this is Davey Havok's band now. And I don't want to call it a side project, because I almost feel like he's more dedicated to Black Audio than he actually is to AFI right now. I actually went to go see Black Audio live this year. Nice. Which was a blast. I had a great time. The only problem I find is with electronic music is it's almost as if they just press the play button and you're listening to the exact same thing you hear on the album.
Yeah.
But it was still fun because you get to because Davey Havok is such a prima donna, and he like dances around on stage and is so
he's a good kind of prima donna.
Yeah, because he's so boisterous and he just dances to everything, and everybody in the room, all the guys want to be Davey Havok and all the girls want to bang him, and that's basically what going to a Black Audio concert is like. And I get to watch it from the outside.
So when I was listening to Black Audio, and I mean this as a positive, yeah, I felt like if someone was to take Weird Al's song Dare to Be Stupid and make a career out of it.
So I do know what you're saying, because the first song, Infinite Skin, has nearly the same pentameter and the same vocal range as Dare to Be Stupid.
Yes.
And I didn't even realize it until you mentioned that to me, which is hilarious. But Infinite Skin, great song to start off the album.
It is a great song. Like I said, I'm not, like, making fun of him. Like,
no, I know.
Dare to Be Stupid is, like, the best, like, original Weird Al song ever did. It's the song that made Devo be like, he made a better Devo song than us.
Yeah, well, which is funny because I feel like Black Audio, every time they release an album, they just make it better and better and better. Because when they first released their first album, Sex Sells, it was okay. There were a couple good songs on it, but overall, meh. And then their next album, same thing. It was like, wow, this has some really good songs on it, but I don't love it. And then Material came out, and oh my gosh, that was probably my album of 2016, possibly. Because I listened to it every single day, from beginning to end. No, I didn't need to skip any songs. And now, Only Thing We Love came out, and that almost overtook this. Another album that I just listened to from beginning to end. So I don't know what Black Audio is doing, but they get it. They get what they're doing, because it just keeps getting better and better with every album that they release.
Perhaps they know what works, and then they just give more of what works.
Well, what's really interesting is, I wonder if that is how it is, because almost every song on this album sounds completely different than the next one. You have Infinite Skin, which is this weird kind of bop to it, and then you go into The Vials, and The Vials is this heavy electronic song, and then you have Muscle and Matter, which is a slow song. And then you go into Summer Out of Sight, which is a high-end pop song.
Yeah.
And I hate pop music, but Summer Out of Sight is one of my favorite tracks on the album. So I was like, what are you guys doing to me? Like, you're making me like pop music? Like, what is this? But so it was just, it's just been an experience with Black Audio. And this is another album that got released really early in the year. The Vials came out.
Yeah.
The Vials were...
This was the second album you told me to listen to on your list.
Well, because The Vials was released, the single for The Vials was released in January, at the very beginning of the year. And then when the actual full album released, I just listened to it every single day. And it's number 3 on my list. Like, it's that good of an album. So in the fact that I went out, as I was thinking about what song I'm going to play from you, or from the Black Audio album, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to play the song that got me to listen to them so much this year, which was the single that they released, which was The Vials. So here we go. Black Audio, Only Things We Love. Here is The Vials.
Light.
From the album Only Thing We Love, The Vials. Evan, what is your number three?
So before I talk about my number three pick, I want to talk a little bit about the Black Keys. So the Black Keys this year released an album called Let's Rock, which brought the duo back to form. It was a great album, couldn't stop listening to it. I initially thought it was going to be an album that was going to be on my top 10 list. But then... country singer Sturgill Simpson had to come around and make a better Black Keys album than they did.
Oh my god.
So, for anyone who's listened to Sturgill Simpson, now, Sturgill Simpson I didn't ever hear about until this year because of a running joke in the movie The Dead Don't Die, where his song is played constantly throughout. So I did a little research about him, and he's actually a damn good country singer. Like, country music is my least favorite genre of music. And he actually makes, like, some amazing music.
Well, the question is does he write country music or does he write country western? Because country western is that pop stuff that's about boots, jeans, farms. And country music is, like, Devil Went Down to Georgia type stuff.
I would say it's a mixture of country and folk.
Interesting. Yeah.
Especially if you listen to A Sailor's Guide to Earth, I believe the album is called. Beautiful country album. It's definitely very different from most mainstream country or even classic country. Sturgill Simpson basically does whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Which leads me to this album, which is called Sound and Fury. So this record was actually inspired by Simpson listening to Eminem and wanting to make a quote-unquote shit-talking album. After he recorded the album, he flew to Japan to convince Batman Ninja director Junpei Mizusaki, who also does all the opening credit animation for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, to do a music video for one of the songs on the record.
A music video.
Mizusaki listens to the whole album, contacts Simpson, and goes, I don't want to do a music video for one of the songs.
Yep.
I want to do the whole album.
So good.
And then the two of them wound up crafting the most badass anime short film of 2019. And it's on Netflix. Yep. People go and watch it. The album itself is just as mesmerizing. I like dub this genre as future country because it has that sort of country vibe to it, but it feeds in so many different sorts of genres without sounding like the blue jeans and drinking beers.
Blue jeans. Well, so I felt a lot of synth pop in this.
Yeah.
As well, which was wild, you know, so it's... Because I listen to synthwave, you know, and synthwave is a good genre. It's also a popular genre. And if you just look at the album cover for this, it looks like a synthwave. Like, it looks like a Laserhawk album.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Like, so. I compare it to, like, again, I have to bring up, like, Kung Fury and, like, all, like, these homages to the 80s and whatnot. It looks like the cover of something from a hardcore anime from the 80s, which is what the movie version of Sound of Fury is. But the album is unbelievable. Like, if you listen to A Good Look, it's the hip shaker of the year. Like, that part in the movie where it's just all the characters just, like, doing crazy dances and whatnot. Nothing to do with the story, but it's just delightful and funny and badass all at the same time. And then you hear a song like Remember to Breathe, which has the spirit of, like, classic Clint Eastwood, with even a bit of the Samurai Yojimbo kind of vibe to it. And then you get a song like Last Man Standing, which feels like a dueling banjos tune with the combatants being a man and his internal demons. It's unbelievable. And the last song on the album, Fastest Horse in Town, it's just like a crescendo of everything that Sturgill Simpson does on this album. Just pure, unadulterated badassery. Probably the most badass country rock song, I think, of the decade. I may not have heard of Sturgill Simpson until this year, you know, thanks in part to The Dead Don't Die, but Sad and Fury has made damn sure I won't be forgetting of him in the future. In fact, I've even bought tickets to see him live when he plays at the TD Garden. That's how awesome this album is. Number three on my list, Sturgill Simpson, Sad and Fury, which not only knocked the Black Keys off my list, but also Jack White and Brendan Benson's band, The Raconteurs. It knocked two albums off of my list. That's how great this record is. Yeah, it's definitely the third most, or even close to like a tie with the second most album I've listened to of 2019. And the song you're going to hear from this record is Best Clockmaker on Mars. Kind of a cowboy bebop-ish kind of title.
Yeah, so bizarre.
Sad and Fury by Sturgill Simpson, my number three pick for album of the year. Now, before we dive into the last couple of albums, because the way that we're going to set this up is both Andrew and I have a shared album of the year pick, and then we have our own respective albums of the year. So before we do that, I want to take a bit of a moment to talk about some honorable mentions, because like we said, this was a great year for music, and it was really hard to, like, put everything onto a list. And for me, on my end, I do have to start off the list with two albums that were really powerful records. Like, any other year, I would have put them on my top 10 list, but my reason for not being on my top 10 list, and this is something that I have never done on my previous list, is factor in the whole aspect of how re-listenable something is.
Right.
And these two albums are powerful. They are sad. They are kind of hard to get through on multiple occasions. But they're by two of my favorite artists on the planet. And I don't want to take away from the fact that they created beautiful musical works of art. And the first person that I'm going to talk about is Amanda Palmer, who, as Andrew can see, I love to death because I have a
Staring at her the whole time
with this poster from when she performed at the Boston Pops. She released an album called There Will Be No Intermission. And it's an album that was built on the basis, or built on, like, kind of like the Me Too movement and various other aspects that has happened. It's a powerful album. It's a great record, but just really sad and really hard to get through. The other album, and it's by another person who is staring at me at the wall, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds released an album called Ghosteen. This album is basically Nick finally coming to terms with the death of his son. It's a beautiful album, but again, wicked set. It's one of those albums where I don't think I've listened to the whole thing because it's so heartbreaking, heart-wrenching. Still, take a listen to them because it's so good. And it keeps showcasing why Nick Cave is such an unbelievable musician. Mm-hmm. How about for you on your end for a couple of honorable mentions?
Oh my gosh, do I have so many. Do you want me to start with the... Do you have more? So do you want me to start with the EPs and singles, or do you want me to start with the honorable mentions?
Well, talk about this, the EPs.
Okay, so for my EPs and singles this year, Rabbit Junk released a new EP. So that's exciting because everybody knows how much I love Rabbit Junk.
That were your album of the year pick last year.
That's right. And so the fact that they had an album released last year and then an immediate EP release this year is awesome. And it's really, really good. It's more Rabbit Junk. It's more of them experimenting with what, you know, they can do as a husband and wife team, what they can do with their sound, and what they can do with the Explorer. But it really goes off of with their album, or with the song Survivor and Reveal, and it had four really solid, I think it was four. It's been a while since I listened to it, but it was like really solid tracks. That it's just kind of like an extension of the last album that they created, which was really cool. Next up is, so I have 1, 2, 3, 4 singles after that EP.
Okay.
The first one is The Black Satans. So if you guys don't know who The Black Satans are, they've never actually officially released an album. They only release singles. And it's because they are a black metal band, but the funniest black metal band you could ever see. They first kind of appeared when they released their song, The Satan of Hell, which is... And it was just this goofy music video of them stomping around in the snow, like almost mocking black metal, but it's real black metal. And so they released a new single this year called "The Eternal Bliss of Satanic Rites," and the music video is like 1,000 times the production value of just this handy cam video camera of them stomping around in the snow being goofy, which I think everybody should watch. It's hilarious. I watch it anytime I need a good laugh. I just go to the Black Satans and I watch The Satan of Hell. But the Eternal Bliss of Satanic Rites did not stray from it, because you have like a guy playing an iPad to play the drums, and you have them, they're playing Sorry like together, and it's like it's a black metal song and a black metal music video, and it is just so funny. Like, if you've ever seen a guy playing the double bass pedal on an iPad, it's genius. It's totally genius. So look up The Black Satans. They're hilarious. Next up is the ultimate single in meme culture. There is a power metal band known as Windrose, and their power metal is based off of dwarven lore and dwarven fantasy.
Okay.
So, if you guys don't remember, it's way, way long ago, back in like 2007, there was a meme by the people at Yogcast, for people who know Yogcast. Yeah. And they created a song called Diggy Diggy Hole. And it was based off of a joke. They were just playing Minecraft, and it was like, I am a dwarf, Diggy Diggy Hole, Diggy Diggy Hole. Then Yogscraft actually created a full-on song out of that. Well, Windrose comes out of nowhere, and they're just like, hey, here's our single of Diggy Diggy Hole, but a power metal version of it. and it is one of the greatest things I never knew I needed in my life. And everybody needs to listen to Diggy Diggy Hole by Windrose. Next, after that, is Brothers of Metal, which is a Eastern European band, of course, about mythology, about Odin, about Thor, and they sing a lot about mythology. They released a new single, which will hopefully lead to a new album this year. I'm not sure if it will, but they might. Finally, we got a wonderful Christmas gift from the lead singer Brooke Reeves of Impending Doom, and his single project called Man of God, which is his experimentation of him going doing single stuff, which is trap music. So you have this deathcore band, which is Impending Doom and one of my favorite Christian bands ever, and he makes trap music with his deathcore singing. And he finally officially released that single on Christmas, and it was just so good. Wow. It's such an experience to listen to. You really should check it out. Evan, what do you got?
So, for other honorable mentions, and I have two albums from bands that I've admired for a very long time. Very good albums. Not their best albums, but still worth mentioning. Our good buddies from Skinny Lister released a really not as powerful and party-worthy as the previous works. More mellow and whatnot.
Yep.
An album called The Story Is. Still a very good record. Just probably not the best album to start off with if you are getting into Skinny Lister.
Right.
And the other band that I have on here is The New Pornographers, which is the supergroup that has one of my favorite singers, Nico Case, in there. An album called In the Morse Code of Brake Lights. A little bit slower than their previous works, but still a very great listen. I do have one other band or artist that I do want to mention. And this is something I would like to label as, okay, mainstream music got something right this time around. And that is Lizzo with her album, 'Cause I Love You. Now, normally, I'm not the type of guy who listens to, like, R&B, rap, or hip-hop. Like, I listen to a lot of underground stuff, but nothing, like, mainstream.
Right.
But, oh my god, fantastic singer, fantastic rapper. She's also a talented flutist, too. Like, she'll do flute solos at our concerts just out of the kind of like a Ron Burgundy kind of a thing. So, while I would say that any other time, like, I would actually list Lizzo's 'Cause I Love You at number 11 on my list if I was to go a little bit higher because of how impressed I was with what she did. Not just musically, but even image-wise, too. Because, you know, she's a big woman, but she's proud of the bigness. It's kind of empowering, but at the same time, like, it's not in your face, but it's badass nonetheless. So, props to you, Lizzo. You got my attention. And who knows, maybe next time around your album might be on my top 10 list if you make a second album. Or rather, your next album, because I think this is actually our third album. Mm. Anyway, those are my honorable mentions.
Okay. Well, I got some more honorable mentions myself, two of which are Dog Fashion Disco. So, Dog Fashion Disco released two albums this year, which is unbelievable, because they're continuing their journey of re-recording all of their old albums that they don't have rights to anymore on their new label.
Right.
So, the first album that they released was Committed to a Brighter Future, which is my favorite Dog Fashion Disco album. So they re-released that this year, and I was so excited because I was like, yes, my favorite album. I'm doing it. We got it. And it was awesome. I loved hearing all the re-recordings because they're not just re-recordings that sound exactly the same. They sound a little bit different. And it's just, it was nice. I think they did it justice to keep it as my favorite Dog Fashion Disco album. And then after that, Dog Fashion Disco did something a little bit different. They released an album called Tres Pendejos, which is acoustic arrangements of songs that are either lesser known or B-sides that they don't that you don't hear too often. And they were so good. This would actually, if Evan allowed me to actually put this album onto the list, it would have been on there.
Yeah,
onto my top 10. Because the way they took their song Sweet Insanity and made it an acoustic version of it, Todd Smith is a genius. Todd Smith is a musical genius. I mean, with all of his different bands that he has and that he runs on his own label, he just, I just don't know how he does it. He's brilliant. I really wish they toured more here on our side of the States, and they go to Britain a lot. They tour in Britain a lot, but they don't tour here a lot, which is crazy because they're from the East Coast or something.
Maybe they're tired of the East Coast.
Hey, I don't know.
You go to Virginia, it's going to be the same as Boston and New Hampshire and those other places.
Next up, before I go on to the ones that I was really super into that only made honorable mention, Consumer Junk released an album, which goes kind of back to my old electronic days. Consumer Junk, they had a lot of really good hits back then, but they released slowly because they're a very, very, very independent crew of music. And as their name suggests, Consumer Junk, they're very interested in talking about economical things and societal things, and we don't agree politically, but musically we agree, you know, where they have very interesting sounds to their electronic compositions, and their lyrics are very, very cool, you know. So that was their new album, Aggression. Then I just wanted to mention that the Planet Smashers released an album. What? They're a ska band, and they're still releasing in 2019. I just saw that and I was like, wow, I have to put that in my mentions because a ska band released a new album, and the Planet Smashers are awesome.
I mean, Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra also released a new album,
yes.
And that was actually number two of my top Japanese albums, and probably, honestly, one of the best ska albums I've heard all decade.
Yeah, are we hearing a revival or something?
I want that to happen. Here's the thing. So ska's still big in Japan.
Yeah.
Everywhere else needs to, you know, get on their shit and do that too. Ska never went away.
And so for my final two honorable mentions that I'm going to go through real quickly, first off, we have Glory Hammer. Glory Hammer is a wonderful band. They're another fantasy power metal band. They love their stories, and every time you listen to an album, it's like you listen to a narrative. It takes you from the beginning of a story to the end of a story. And every time they release an album, it's a new generation of Angus McFife, their main character. So this is just like the newest Angus McFife. And finally, the biggest album I think that got released this year that didn't make the list, but I think is a massive, massive achievement in musical history, is Blind Guardian. So Blind Guardian is a massive name in power metal. But this is different because they didn't release under the Blind Guardian name. They released under Blind Guardian Twilight Orchestra. An actual orchestral hit. Like, you can't tell when one song strings into another song. It's just one continuously long song of an operatic power metal ballad.
Damn.
It's crazy. This is like the hit that I forget his name, the lead singer of power, but this is his life. He dreamed of doing this, of putting this huge orchestral hit together, and now he's living his dream of actually having an orchestra play his music, and he gets to tell a giant orchestral story from beginning to end, and you just listen to it without any breaks. It's insane. I've never heard anything like it before. Those are all my honorable mentions.
And those are some great picks. I mean, just some phenomenal albums. And just think of, like, if those albums were great, and now you're getting down to our list of all these other better albums, what people may think, what is coming with our number two and number one picks, which technically our number two pick is our shared
number one.
Our shared number one. Yeah. That's what we decided on because we each have our own album of the year, but we both agree that this number two pick should also be a shared number one.
Well,
kind of like how what we should have done with Andrew WK last year.
Yeah, because we both agreed that Andrew WK's album could easily have been number one, but we shared that opinion that it was number two. so it was technically our shared number one.
Yes.
For that year. This is exactly what we're doing this year.
And oh geez, what band do you think we're going to talk about?
I don't know. We only see them every year that they come to the United States.
And we always somehow find a way to talk about them on our podcast shows.
Yeah.
Of course we're talking about motherfucking Sabaton.
Sabaton. I'm wearing my Sabaton shirt right now because Sabaton is the best band out there. Oh my god.
Yes. So, that concert was amazing too, by the way.
The concert was a smash hit, which actually I'm surprised in my honorable mentions I didn't mention Hammerfall.
Hammerfall.
Hammerfall released an album this year too, and they were touring with Sabaton.
Yes.
And oh my gosh, I couldn't think of a better way to open up a concert than listen to Hammerfall, because they're such an awesome band. But man, after Sabaton came on, it was just like, this is literally the best concert I've ever seen. I no joke, that was the best concert I've ever seen.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Really. Yeah, because they brought their tank with them this time.
Yes, that's right.
They Joachim was so excited to be like, America, we finally got to bring our tank with us. And we were like, yeah, we know Joachim Broda. So it was an exciting year for Sabaton. Cause I remember, dude, when Sabaton announced, or there was this special announcement, and we were like, It's an album. It has to be an album.
Yes.
Because like, they're not going to just announce a tour.
Right.
A special announcement. So there was literally just maybe 1,000 people sitting on YouTube waiting for this video to play. And lo and behold, the video is 5, 4, 3, 2. And I was sitting at my computer. And I'm sitting there with just in awe. Like, oh my gosh, what is this gonna, it's going to be a new album. It's going to be a new album. And then it just starts playing like this video of like, we got smoke and fire and skulls and a soldier. And then it says, The Great War. And we're like, oh my God. Everybody's screaming, but I can't hear them because the chat is just going crazy. But I'm screaming.
Yeah.
I'm screaming it in my house all on my own. An album about World War I.
And the only way Sabaton can do so. And here's the thing I found really interesting. If it wasn't for, like, the Great War, like, how much more people are now paying attention to, like, what happened in World War I? So before Sabaton went on stage, they were showing this short video about World War I and its importance. And the thing that shocked me the most is, like, what we're doing right now is we're trying to raise money to build a memorial for World War I in D.C. And then you're like, oh my god, that's right. Like, I've been to D.C. so many times, I have never seen a World War I memorial there.
And we have everybody in the crowd chanting, USA,
USA. USA.
And it was just like, and you know the Swedes, man. The Swedish people love America. They really, like, Swedish people are super patriotic. Like, when you go to Sweden, they have American flags flying with their Swedish flags and people wearing American flag t-shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's so cool to see Sabaton come here and just be so thrilled that they have such a warm welcome by all their American fans. You know, because
why wouldn't they?
Yeah, because we love them as much as they love us.
Yeah.
And the fact that they get to play for us, they find to be a joy. And I'm just like, holy crap. Like, this is a pleasure for me and them.
I mean, odds are it's not true, but at the same time, I feel like if it wasn't for this album, there wouldn't be this much attention that's been given to, like, World War I. Like, now we've got, like, this movie that just came out in 1917.
And apparently it's amazing, which I want to see so bad.
Me too. Like, I think it opens this weekend
or
next weekend.
Like that.
I really want to go see that. But, like, World War I is getting a lot more respect because, you know, the things that happened, the atrocities of World War II overshadowed the atrocities of World War I.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, you can't be, like, comparing wars back and forth.
Yeah, right.
But it's sad that you can't, like, World War I doesn't get the same amount of attention because a lot of people died, a lot of tragedies happened, and a lot of great heroes rose from the ashes of World War I.
Well, hey, I mean, I say it all the time. I never learned about history as much in school as I have ever since listening to Sabaton.
I'm in the same boat.
It's a funny thing to say, but it's true.
As they say, history is written by the winners.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sabaton goes further and says, we're writing it the way it actually was.
Yeah. Yeah, and so every time you listen to a Sabaton album, and this album is so beautifully constructed. It is seriously one of the best albums that they've ever released.
I would say it's their strongest work since Carolus Rex.
Yeah, and Carolus Rex is easily known as their best album that they've ever made. And not to say, because The Last Stand was a phenomenal album.
Right, was like, that was your 2016 album of the year.
Well, yeah, because it was like, how can we top The Last Stand? Well, we made The Great War.
Yeah.
And I think Sabaton is just going to keep making these. They're just going to keep making them. And I don't see how they can make something bad as long as they keep writing the way they're writing. Because they have a formula, you know?
Yeah, it's a history formula. They're writing about actual factual events, but they're telling it in a way, like I said, that only Sabaton could. It's exciting the way that they sing it, but it doesn't take away from the heroic aspects, the tragic aspects, yep. Everything that makes these moments in history so important.
Well, and so you get songs like Seven Pillars of Wisdom, which is an event that nobody would ever hear of. And
unless, then, of course, you watch the movie Lawrence of Arabia.
Correct. And then you have, like,
82nd All the Way about Alvin York.
The March of the Dead Men.
Yeah, Attack of the Dead Men.
Attack of the Dead Men. Like, that song sounds so different than every other song on the album. And the fact that they played it live is just wild.
Yeah. You know,
because I didn't think
it's a haunting song,
it's
too.
It's a haunting song with a really strange melodic tune. And I didn't expect them to play it, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, to be honest, I think Seven Pillars is my favorite. And it's just crazy. Which, and also speaking of 82nd All the Way, Amaranth released a single.
I know, we watched it today.
Like, the first single from Nuclear Blast of 2020 is an Amaranth song, which is a cover
of a
Sabaton song. And I love Amaranth, and it was a good cover. Holy crap.
And then you had, like, Fields of Verdun.
Yep.
And then this great tribute to all of the people who fell 100 years ago, the end of the war to end all wars.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, musically, this is their strongest work since Carolus Rex. It's a beautiful record. It's heavy, it is power metal to the extreme, and it's in a package that only Sabaton could ever wrap it in so perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
So the song that we're going to play on there, this is probably my absolute favorite song of 2019. I just want to say that.
Yeah.
And hearing him do this song live, it was great hearing it live. However, I'm just a little bit disappointed that Yoakam didn't come out in like a keyboard like tank to do the kick-ass keyboard solo on here. He goes like fucking Emerson, Lake, and Palmer on this song, which is like the best part of the song. Which is sad that he doesn't get to do that in the live version. So, Joachim, please, get yourself, like, a badass guitar or something like that so you can do it live.
He used to play keyboard on stage.
Yeah, he used did.
In the old days, he did do that. So,
bring it back.
Bring it back.
Bring it back. And, of course, we're talking about the song, which is about Snoopy's favorite rival.
Yeah.
That song is The Red Baron.
Red Baron.
Machine is not the able. flying, and he's flying, and he's flying higher. The king of the sky, he's flying too fast and he's flying too high. Higher, an eye for an eye, blood you will never die.
And that was The Red Baron by Sabaton from The Great War.
Yay.
The number two pick for both of us, but technically our dual album of the year pick.
Yep.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time that we talk about our singular album of the year picks. Oh, I wonder what Andrew's going to talk about.
Well, seeing that you guys haven't heard me bring it up since the beginning of the one of the first things I talked about on this podcast, it's my boys over at Twilight Force. So Twilight Force is in the same way that Sabaton is. I started listening to Twilight Force, Sabaton, and Freedom Call all at the same time. So the fact that all three of my favorite bands this year released is just the greatest thing ever.
On top of that, they're all playing at Sabaton Open Air.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Sabaton Open Air this year is going to be on fire. So Twilight Force this year. We were worried. I was worried. Because Christian Eriksen left. Obviously, all the tension is broken because you know that they're number one right now. However, I have to tell the story.
Yeah.
So Christian Eriksen leaves the band, and we say, oh no, what's going to happen to Twilight Force? Is Twilight Force Christian Eriksen? Is Twilight Force the composition that they build as the band? Because the real person who actually runs Twilight Force is Blackwald, the keyboard player, the guy who dresses as a wizard.
Okay.
And
which, by the way, if you listen, when you listen to this song and then you look up the band, you're going to be like, of course, this is what they look like.
Yeah, it's great. And so I was worried personally, is the sound of Twilight Force going to change? And then they announced the person who they got to as the singer, which is Alessandro Conti. And so Alessandro Conti's the new singer. He's a good singer for power metal. He's a famous power metal singer. Is he as good as Christian Eriksen? No. So we were worried. And then the first single came out. And I listened to it more than any other song, maybe ever. Because I fell in love with it again. This band that took me through all my hardest times in life. And like along with Sabaton, along with Freedom Call, and I wanted this band to be my favorite still. And oh my gosh, are they my favorite still? When Evan was just like, "Hey Andrew, you have to send me the songs to play for this album," I legitimately couldn't because
I waited for days for him to send that song,
and I was like, "Evan, I'm sorry. I need your help, you know, and I need your help picking a song because I listened to this album from beginning to end every single day. This is what I do my art to because I'm writing a fantasy comic and this is my ultimate fantasy power metal band.
And it's definitely a really hard album to choose one song from because just of how they all flow together.
Yeah.
Like it could be just one singular track. We were talking about this before we recorded about how very theatrical, very visual the album is.
Yeah.
Like you close your eyes, you listen to it, like you're picturing the big Broadway stage production of Dawn of the Dragonstar.
I mean, the title track Dawn of the Dragonstar starts the album off. And the first lyrics are "Once in a land in a kingdom far away," and you're just like, "Okay, let's go. We're gonna start a story.
All
let's
right,
do it." And it's just a banger. And you're just like, you know, you have Alessandro Conti showing you that he's confident. I can replace Christian Eriksen in this spot.
Yeah.
Ugh, and it's so good. And it's interesting because Dawn of the Dragonstar is a track that starts it off high.
Yeah.
And then it's like, let's start over from the beginning. Because then you have Thundersword, which starts off calmly and collected.
So would you call Dawn of the Dragonstar the overture?
Yes, I would. It's more of a prologue to the album. And then Thundersword is the actual start to the album. And I almost chose Thundersword as my sample to play. Because I actually resonate with Thundersword. My main character in my comic book is Thunder.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Thundersword is his. And that was before Dawn of the Dragonstar even came out. And so, like, these guys will and probably forever will be in my top three bands ever. Even if they release an album that sucks and I hate it, I still have the first three Twilight Force albums that are just like, these are the best albums I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know? And then you have songs that go down. You have Long Live the King, which is a fun, like, chant of like, ooh, this is fun, Long Live the King. Queen of Eternity, which is a majestic ballad about the protector of time. And then you have The Hydra, which is a song about a great battle, about the great beast of the Hydra, ancient and endangering the land, but we're gonna fight the Hydra. And then you have Blade of Immortal Steel, which is the longest ballad that Twilight Force has ever created. A 12-minute song that doesn't feel like 12 minutes. It just feels like a song that is just there to finish off the album and its people. But then the album doesn't end. You have bonus track after bonus track after bonus track after bonus track, where they release all their demos from all their old videos.
Mm-hmm.
But the song that comes after Blade of Immortal Steel is Power of the Ancient Force. And if you listen to the first Twilight Force album, Tales of Ancient Prophecies, it's almost as if the title track wasn't that, because it was Power of the Ancient Force.
Mm-hmm.
And they released this slow indie cover of it. And it is such... And I don't like that kind of music. I don't like slow indie. But I listened to this and I was just like, imagine if Twilight Force was an old-timey 80s Saturday morning cartoon. And then it's the current year and they're making a gritty remake movie of that 80s cartoon. And this is the song that they used in the trailer instead of that goofy power metal version of "With the Power of the Ancient Force, Stars Are Shining."
So it's basically when they did the Banana Splits movie.
Yeah, kind of. Because now it's "From the Power of the Ancient Force, Stars Are Shining." And it's so different that even though I don't like that kind of music, it gave me chills. Best album of the year. Best album of the year. And I forever will be a fan of Twilight Force, and I cannot wait for them to show up in the United States so that I can go see them. And I promise you, I will stop everything. I'm going to go see them, you know? So, what song am I actually going to play for you? Well, at the beginning of my talk about Twilight Force, I talked about the single that I couldn't stop. I probably listened to it hundreds of times at this point before the album was actually released. And it was because I had such a trouble thinking of a song to choose to say, hey, masses, this is the song you have to listen to get an idea of what this album is. I just figured, well, I'll give them what I heard when I first heard that Twilight Force released an album, and that is Night of Winter Light. was Twilight Force, Night of Winterlight off of Dawn of the Dragonstar. I promise you, listen to the whole album. It is a beautiful, beautiful track. But, Evan, what is your personal number one this year for 2019?
So first off, I do not think I'm ever going to top how you described Dawn of the Dragonstar, but I'm going to try anyway. But before I talk about this particular album, I want to mention Rammstein.
Yes.
So after 10 long years of waiting, Rammstein released a new album.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first listened to it, I was like, yay, this is great.
It's good.
It's good. Yeah. I like it. I love it. I'm finally happy to hear new Rammstein music. But then something happened. So, band Rammstein, I believe it's Richard Crusp who once described being in Rammstein as marriage without sex. Because they're a great band, they care about each other, but it lacks the sort of excitement. Because think about when they do the live shows. Exciting for us to watch, but, you know, they have to...
They've done it a bajillion times.
You can do a blindfold and everything. So, Till Lindemann and Payne's Peter Tagren, I think I'm pronouncing right, they start their own project called Lindemann.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of like the equivalent of, let's say, if Rammstein is sex without marriage, marriage without sex, this is Till visiting a brothel to get the sex. And their first album, Skills and Pills, is that. It's a fun album, not great, just Till getting his rocks off.
But it's got some good hits.
It's got some good hits. But then, album number two comes around. And this is Till visiting the brothel. The head of the, whatever you want to call it, I've never been to a brothel myself. So, like, the head of the brothel is like, oh, Till.
The madam.
The madam. We've got a new girl. Till has a go with no girl, and she becomes his soulmate. Like, he falls in love with this
For
girl.
Some, I feel like this is actually a true story that may have happened.
It might have. And that album is called F and M.
Mm-hmm.
So, for 12 months, Till and Peter had been dropping hints on what F and M might be like.
Right.
And the first song that they dropped was Mathematic, which is a hilarious SoundCloud rapper styled song about how much he hated learning algebra in school.
It's such a stupid song.
It's a stupid song. But are you going to tell Till Lindemann that you can't be a SoundCloud rapper?
No.
Go and be XX Deutschland Fistmaster 69XX.
Yeah.
That'll be his SoundCloud rapper name.
That's so great.
Then they released Stay Off.
Mm-hmm.
And this was more akin to what we know Till is really good at. It's loud, it's passionate, and it rocks really hard. Great video for that too, by the way. And then he dropped a music video, or rather they dropped a music video for Kanebo. Folks, do not do what I did and watch it at 1 in the morning.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
It's bizarre, but it's like, this dude's fearless of what he wants to do.
And we really knew that from the beginning, I would say.
We knew that from the beginning. So the song Kanebo, it starts off acoustically, and then it takes a sharp left turn in a way that you would never expect it. But at the same time, you would kind of expect it because it goes into that hard, screaming metal that Till's really good at. And then the album actually dropped, FNM. This is what the Rammstein album that came out this year should have been. It made that Rammstein album practically unlistenable. Now, here's an interesting fact about this album, and apparently, some of the songs that are on FNM were originally used for a stage adaptation of Hansel and Gretel, which Till Lindemann actually starred in.
Really?
I don't know if he played Hansel or the witch. He could have played Gretel.
He could have played Gretel because we know what he's like.
Yeah. But I found it really interesting. But throughout the album, it's got like all these amazing, like fist-pumping songs like Gummi, Ich war es nicht, and Alles für Schar. And it's filled with all this passion, especially in Till's vocals. And when I go back and listen to the Rammstein album that came out this year, that's what I notice most about that record. There's no passion in what Till is singing on that Rammstein album. On the Lindemann album, he has got this fire in his belly that he's just screaming out of there. And yeah, it's the left turns on Lindemann that made it my pick for best album of 2019. I mean, Ashagan, it's a tango song. It's this sort of Spanish flamenco dance kind of song, and Till does such an amazing job with it vocally. And then you've got this beautiful piano ballad, Schlaf ein. And I apologize if I'm butchering all the German while I'm saying these titles. I'm doing the German what Andrew was doing with all the Swedish.
Yeah,
the Swedish or the Swiss numbers. But man, like, out of all the albums that I've listened to, this is the record that I found myself listening to every day since it's come out. It makes the hair on my arms just rise up with all the goosebumps that I feel. It's, honestly, thinking back, like, no disrespect to all the other Rammstein albums, I have not heard Till sound this excited about the music that he's singing since 2001's Mutter.
Which is an amazing album.
It is. FNM, it's powerful, it's shocking, lyrically disturbing, yet beautiful. Like, Stay Off, when you listen to that song, you think, oh yeah, it's a power song, yeah, it's gonna get you through. No, it's a song about a kid who's trying to wake up his mother after she overdosed on a drug. Yeah. It's messed up.
My favorite song off the album is Ich Weiß Es Nicht. And the video is even cooler because it's that new technology of when you take one picture and morph it into another picture.
Yes.
And that's like all the music. They basically took an algorithm and they were like, here's our music computer, make a music video out of it. And it was like, okay, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's wild.
I actually forgot about that music video.
Yeah, that was actually released before Knabel.
Yes. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. Great out. I believe that's the one where it's about trying to find your identity. Like, he's lost his memory and he's trying to figure out who he is.
Which makes the music video really appropriate, because it's just morphing images after image after image after image.
Yes.
So cool.
It is. So, my number one pick for album of the year, FNM by Lindemann. It is everything that has made Till Lindemann the most fearless frontman on the planet, all in one record. And the song I'm going to play off of there is the song that is why it's called FNM. This song from FNM by Lindemann is called Frau and Mann.
Und lang, dick und schlank, groß und klein, grob und fein. Wasser oder Feuer, billig oder teuer, dunkel oder hell, langsam oder schnell, nass und trocken, knien oder hocken, schlafen oder wachen, weinen oder lachen. Und her, leicht und schwer.
wieder Frau und Mann. Immer Schatten, wenig Licht, doch ohne Liebe geht es nicht.
Ei, 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 hässlich oder schön, im Liegen oder Stehen.
Ei, ei, ei,
Frau oder Mann, Gegensätze ziehen sich an.
And that was Frau and Mann from Lindemann. The album is called FNM, and that is my personal number one pick for best album of 2019.
And that was our complete list of all of our albums of 2019.
That was our complete list. But before we truly end things, we should maybe just talk a little bit about the 2010s. They're over. They're done. So I want to ask you, Andrew, about maybe... All right, let's make it a little bit challenging. I already know my answer for this one.
Mm-hmm.
One album from this entire decade that you would feel like sums up your love for the music. What do you think was the best album you heard all decade long?
All decade long? Well, biasly, it's going to have to be Freedom Calls Beyond album. That album legitimately changed my life. Because it came at a hard time. I literally discovered the Beyond album, like, right after my father passed away. And I was, again, I started listening to Twilight Force and Sabaton while my dad was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he passed away, I started listening to Freedom Call. And I was just like, wow, like, this music is really helping me. And so I don't think I've ever responded to an album. Like, in the way that I never used to listen to power metal. At all.
Yeah.
I was a metalhead, but power metal was... I was just like, eh, that's stupid. I don't like that. And then, but I needed something happy.
Yeah.
So I was just like, I wonder what this power metal thing is all about. Because I started listening to Sabaton, and I was like, okay, well, they're considered power metal. Let me find something else that's power metal. I found Twilight Force, because Twilight Force is because Joachim Broden did guest spots with them. And then in the mix of all those, and of the, all those music, Google threw Freedom Call at me. And then I discovered Freedom Call. So, changed my life. 2014's album Beyond is probably the album that changed my decade.
I think it's a good choice.
Yeah.
Very good choice. Very personable, too, because I feel like that's most important, because they're albums that made you be, like, a person, like, made you a better person, made you, like, understand, like, the beauty of, like, music.
Yeah.
And just everything that you appreciate about the art form.
Absolutely. Yep.
So for me, I definitely have to go back and talk about the album that I gave my album of the year pick last year, which was Dose Your Dreams by Fucked Up.
Mm.
To this date, I have yet to hear an album that is so eclectic with all of its styles, yet flows so perfectly with the story that it's telling. Despite the fact that it's a sequel, technically, to their 2011 album, David Comes to Life, which in itself is a great album, too. It was my album of the year pick when that was in 2011. Dose Your Dreams achieves so much more because of the risks that the band took. Because with them being mostly a hardcore punk band, there's that stigma of that's what you have to kind of stick with. But Fucked Up is really good at kind of... going in different directions than most hardcore punk bands.
Right.
And Dose Your Dreams demonstrated that by their mixture of prog rock and alt rock and indie music, dream pop. Every single time I put on the album of Dose Your Dreams, when you're hearing that piano introduction, again, I'm feeling the goosebumps rising from my arm. Like, I feel the same way about this album today as I did when I first listened to it when it was released in October of 2018. It is a great mixture of so many genres of rock and pop, but they do it in such a way that it doesn't take away from what makes Fucked Up one of the most unbelievably best bands on the planet. So that's my pick for best album of the decade. How about for artist?
Ooh, artist. Well, seeing that Twilight Force was born in the 2010s, the fact that they rose from nothing and were pretty much carried because they had this friendship with Sabaton, but they were able to hold their own because of how musically brilliant they are. Bands like, you know, Grendel fell off for me, and then Dope Stars, one of my favorite bands ever. Yeah, Dope Stars Inc. They kind of disappeared because Victor Love wanted to go do his own thing and do solo, and now he still makes amazing music, but it's not like he's making Dope Stars Inc. anymore with a band. So this new band emerged, which was Twilight Force. Nobody knows who they are. Who are these guys? Like, they have a self-published thing, and then by their second album, Nuclear Blast is already like, we want these guys. And I think Twilight Force, if I'm going to give Freedom Call the best album I've ever heard, Twilight Force is going to be the best artist that came out of, like, from nothing in the 2010s. So great.
Okay. So I actually had to think a little bit about this, and I had to think about the evolution of a band that went from something at the beginning of the 2010s to probably to the end of it. Now, when I think back at, like, the 2000s, I look at groups like Queens of the Stone Age as a band that has evolved so well and strongly throughout there. And despite the fact that they released two amazing albums in the 2010s, I'm not going to give it again to them.
Yep.
Instead, I'm going to go give it to a band that you and I had the privilege of seeing live last December, and that is Ghost.
Yeah.
Ghost transformed themselves from this sort of doom metal rock and roll sort of style all the way to this arena rock vibe, but at the same time still keeping to that dark elements of the doom metal.
Yep.
And while the unmasking of Tobias Forge as the Pope's and Cardinal, like, it was kind of disappointing to see that being unmasked.
Yeah.
It didn't take away from the magic, because if you think about, like, when that happened, he went, what can I do to make this still feel more mysterious?
Yeah.
And that's when they started making more of these short films with with Papa Zero and The Woman, and now with Cardinal Copia.
Yep.
And while Ghost has never topped any of my albums lists in this entire decade, I will say that they are a band that has gotten better and better and better as the years have progressed.
Yeah, Prequel came pretty close.
If Andrew W.K. didn't release an album that year, Prequel would have been our shared number one pick year.
Most definitely.
So everything that Ghost has accomplished with, like, the kind of imagery that they have, normally they would be kind of stuck in, like, venues like House of Blues or even smaller clubs like that. They're playing arenas and stadiums now because people have latched onto the mythos that Tobias Forge has created.
Yeah.
Not to mention just the great music that he has created. So for me, for Artist of the Decade, I gotta go with Ghost because of just how well Tobias Forge has evolved the band throughout the 10 years. Went from this very obscure, satanic-looking band to one of the biggest acts in the world right now.
Yeah, what the heck? Good choice.
Thank you. Anything else in the 2010s that you feel stood out?
Well, as you know, I listen to a lot of music that nobody else listens to.
Well, we're on the same boat.
Look
at what I do on my show.
I know, exactly. and I love just letting people know that bands exist. If you like avant-garde bands, like, I love avant-garde music. Not everybody does, because it's a weird, like, Mike Patton basically invented the genre of avant-garde, and everybody was like, I like what Mike Patton does, I'm gonna do that myself.
Yeah.
And so you get bands like Dog Fashion Disco and Tub Ring, and then all of Mike Patton's other bands like Mr. Bungle and whatever, and I love, so that's great. It's something different. And then you have bands that fuse genres, which are bands like Dope Stars Inc. and they create this cyberpunk metal that is heavily electronic, but the guitars are real. Yeah. And everything is real, but it sounds electronic. But then Victor Love goes out and he's like, I want to go do my own thing. And he's basically creating electronic metal, and so a lot of it is covers of video game music. And it's really cool. It sounds beautiful. And he's doing like these small tours, and I don't know. I just feel like people who get stuck as like, oh, I found this band and I want to explore this one band. That's really cool. But I always love to expand that more and be like, okay, because I like this band, what does this band sound like? Like, what is it? What's being suggested to me? And I'm constantly expanding all these smaller bands that nobody's telling me to listen to. It's everybody. It's you know, I don't like mainstream media telling me what to do with my music. Yeah. You know, because all of their music sucks. You know, unless,
for the most part,
like unless a Gorillaz album is coming out, don't tell me about mainstream music, kind of thing. You know,
sorry for breaking up Lizzo then.
Oh no, I don't care. I don't even know who that is. So it might be an indie band to me. But yeah, no, I just think music in general, like that's how I do my art anyway. You know, I'm constantly listening to music so that I can be inspired to draw, and it's. So, that's why I talk about so much power metal. Nobody knows about power metal. Like, who's listening to power metal? You know, a lot of people, but not enough.
Right.
Kind of a thing. That's why we have to have Sabaton show up at Worcester Palladium and not at the TD Garden. Because they're, like, they could be a stadium band like Ghost.
They could be.
You know? Like, and I think eventually they will be. I hope they're not, because then the shows are going to be more expensive and harder to get into. But they could be.
They could be.
Because they are around the world. So that's what I like about it, and that's I think bands like those are really who need to be focused on.
Absolutely, for me, this was definitely the decade where just the quote-unquote mainstream music became it became eclectic, but at the same time, it became a little bit too samey. Like I noticed just how so many bands would come out, it'd be just the same things over and over and over again, and it got to a point for me where like. I try my best to, like, keep an ear out into the mainstream music world and pay attention to what these bands and artists and no matter what the genre is, try to pay attention to what they're doing. This was the era where I just tuned that out completely. Mm-hmm. With the exception of maybe one or two artists. All the best stuff are the things you had to dig through.
Yeah.
You had to discover. The great example of us finding out who Sabaton was. We went to a baby metal show. They were playing Swedish Pagans over the speakers. We were like, who is this? I pull out the Shazam, find out this band, and they become one of our all-time favorite metal bands.
All-time favorite, yeah.
So this was the decade of self-discovery. That's what I like to describe it. This was the decade where everybody out there, hopefully everyone out there, went out on their own. We don't want what you mainstream people are selling. I want to go and find out something that appeals to me. Maybe it might just appeal to me only, but it's going to make me feel something. This was the decade to do it.
Well, that's always been my mentality anyway. If somebody comes up to me and says, hey, I don't like that band that you listen to, all I say is, great, that means it's more of my band than your band, or than everybody else's band.
Exactly.
Like, I like this band, it's a great feeling.
Absolutely. It's a bittersweet feeling for me, because it's more of me, like, going, more people should be listening to this, but then you're like, you make the great point of, like, wait, if more people listen to this, then it's gonna be harder for me to see them live.
Yep.
On a budget.
Yep. So, and it becomes less of yours and more of... Because then everybody's going to be like, oh, I found this band. Well, it's like, no. I found this band.
Right. That's why I'm grateful that, like, Mark Lanegan went and did his own thing. Didn't stick to Screaming Trees. If Screaming Trees was still around, they'd probably be as big as Pearl Jam. And Pearl Jam sells out arenas and stadiums and whatnot. And Mark Lanegan would be doing that. I'm glad that he went and did his own thing, and I can see him in a small place like the Sinclair.
Well, even
up close in person.
We'll even think of someone like Davey Havoc with AFI.
Yeah.
AFI was a huge punk band, and it was a punk band that kind of turned into an emo band.
Yeah.
But then he goes and does Black Audio, and AFI fans still go listen to Black Audio, but now I'm listening to Black Audio. And I don't like AFI at all, but Black Audio is great, you know? So it's interesting.
It's, like I said, this was an interesting decade. Self-discovery and just choosing the music that we like, not having the higher-ups tell us what to like.
That's right.
So, with that, I think we could put a cork in this podcast show because, holy crap, this was a long episode.
That's pretty much how long it was last year.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. So, Andrew, where can people find out about your stuff?
All right, everybody. If you want to go find my stuff, you can find me on all the social medias. You can find me at AFLM_art on Instagram, AFL at AFLM art on Facebook, AFLM art on Twitter. You can also find me at SolariansUn.com. That's where my webcomic is. And you can also find me at AFLM art on Patreon if you want to help me build Solarian Sun. So like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Solarian Sun is for free at SolariansUn.com, and it's currently at page 53, the start of chapter 2. And Patreon, if you pay, you get 20 plus pages, and it's still growing, because, well, I mean, it's going to be up to like 50 plus pages more than the free stuff, because you get more pages every week than you do for the free comic. So come join me over there. You can find me everywhere. That's it.
All right. Because as people know, Wicked Anime is on hiatus, indefinite hiatus. I know that's an evil, very evil phrase to say.
It is.
It'll come back one day, but for now, we're just enjoying doing our own things.
That's right.
So, as always, for our listeners, please go to b3crew.com for all of the Boston Bash Brigade stuff. Like us on facebook.com/BostonBashBrigade. Follow me on Twitter on the J-Pop, Video Games, and Anime Amino pages, and on Instagram at KingBabyDuckESH. So, today, for this episode, I want to end with a wonderful shout-out to a great band that I've been close friends with for well over a decade. And that band is The Stampede. Now, I went to college with their drummer, Chris Thalen, and I actually helped them get their first couple of performances at a college event at Salem State when I went there. And it's fantastic to see them evolve into a rock band. Like, they started out kind of like the Black Keys with the two-man band, but have evolved into this great hard rock sort of desert rock band that I feel like almost anyone can truly enjoy, even if they are, you know, 5 pints in of a beer or something like that. And even back when they were starting to play like small clubs, like back when we had Teach the Bears and everything, I was always referring to them as the unofficial band of Boston Bashing Brigade. This year, after 10 years of being together, they finally released their first full LP. They released an EP a couple of years ago, but now they have their first full album, A Marvel of Idiocy. The final song off that album, the SS Shitstorm, is now the No Borders, No Race theme song. It was a song I heard them do 4 years ago at a concert, told them right then and there, I want this to be my podcast theme. It took them 4 years to record it, but I'm glad to have it. So, the song that I'm going to play from their album of Marvel Idiocy, since I didn't play the theme song today, I figured I would end the show with the Stampede instead, is the song Pretty Lies. So, until next time, this is your King Baby Doc Evan Borgo,
your lovely artist, most famous artist in the world, AFLM,
reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard,
but it sure helps.
Bye.
guys, this is your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo, from the Electric Sisterhood, and your host for the No Borders, No Race podcast. Each episode, we play the best, brightest, and hottest acts from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. Every song spun is but a mere taste of what you can expect of the artists heard, so if you truly loved what hit your eardrums, please be sure to support these musicians and buy their albums, EPs, and singles. Places like Amazon.com, CD Japan, Yes Asia, Bandcamp, iTunes, and even your local record store are great places to plop down some sweet moolah to let those artists know that they're doing a heck of a good job with their melodies. The more an artist gets support from listeners, the better the chance that they'll come to a venue nearest you to play the sounds that won your heart. This message is brought to you by the Boston Bastard Brigade, reminding you all to support your local, national, and international artists any way you can.